Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Yelp said you were a great cheap doctor, and I feel like you're sort of slinging labels at me all of a sudden.
Diagnosis.
Diagnosing me as what? Fat? All body types are beautiful.
That's true. And you also want to be healthy. Your resting heart rate is elevated. Your blood pressure is very high, especially for a 28-year-old. I mean, for you, I'm worried about fatty liver disease.
Oh, even my liver's fat, huh?
Let's get you healthy. Diet. Exercise. I want you to try losing between 45 and 55 pounds.
That's the weight of a Siberian husky. You want me to pull a medium-sized working dog off of my body, is that right?
Hello, and welcome to The Last Laugh. I'm Matt Wilstein from The Daily Beast. My guest this week is the incredibly talented and funny actress Jillian Bell. I first saw Jillian on Curb Your Enthusiasm many, many years ago. She appeared on that show not only with Larry David, but also with Jerry Seinfeld. She's probably best known for playing a character named Jillian Belk, with a K, on Workaholics, and also for stealing scenes in films like Rough Night and 22 Jump Street. Now she's starring in the Sundance hit Britney Runs a Marathon. It's Jillian's first leading role in a movie, so I was really excited to talk to her about this big new step in her career. And it's a really fantastic and touching and hilarious movie that I think everyone will enjoy when it hits theaters later this month. All right, so let's go to my conversation with the great Jillian Bell. Well, thanks for coming in. You're based in L.A., right?
I am. Here? I live in L.A.
Yeah, because I know you've been kind of all over with this film, Britney Runs a Marathon.
Yeah.
Sundance, South by Southwest, or
Are we
New
doing
York.
It now? Is
sure.
it on?
Yeah, this
sure.
is it.
Oh, my gosh. You just kind of
right
snuck
in.
Right into it.
Yeah.
It was startling.
Yeah. I didn't mean to startle you.
No. But I'm here now. I feel like a person on this earth. We've been traveling all over. Mm-hmm. I was just in New York. I went to Provincetown. I went to Cannes. Is that how you say it?
Cannes.
Sure. I went there and I still
that's
don't know.
Cool.
But that wasn't for the film. That was for a show called Bless the Hearts that's coming out. But,
very cool.
Yeah, but I've been traveling.
Yeah.
San Diego, Comic-Con.
Wow.
Yeah. And now Los Angeles, where I'm very, very happy
now
to be.
Now back home.
Yeah.
Well, I got to see this movie, Britney Runs a Marathon, a few weeks ago and just really, really loved it.
Oh, good.
So congrats
I'm so glad.
On that. I mean, you're a producer on the film. It's your first real lead in a film,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, first time playing the title character, for
so,
sure.
So what's that been like to kind of go through this process? And you had a big premiere at Sundance, as we said. And
we did in January. It was unreal. I'd never been to Sundance before. Have you been?
I have not been to Sundance, no.
I had never done any of the festival circuit.
Yeah.
But Sundance was my first one, and one of the producers was like, don't ever come back. This is the best case scenario. We had no idea if it was going to, anyone was going to buy it, mm-hmm. how people were going to react. So we were at the Eccles Theater, mm-hmm. and it's in a school, which, by the way, if I had that kind of a theater next to my high school, I would have lost my mind. But I remember there was a green room, like a basically hangout area for everyone to chill and just like say, hi, how are you doing? And big day. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I can't be around anybody right now. I'm so nervous that we're about to show this to so many people. And my manager right before had been like, so they make little statements, you know, on Twitter or whatever. They make their first initial reaction mm-hmm. statements immediately after they walk outside.
Like the critics.
Yeah, critics. And so they're like, she's like, do you want to hear the good? Do you want to hear the really bad? Like, what do you want to hear? I was like, oh my gosh, people are going to have opinions. And I wasn't thinking about that. So I went and sat in the hallway of this high school. And I remember the classes were changing, you know, mm-hmm. the bell went off. And
so like, it's an active high school.
It's
like
an
happening.
Active high school where this is happening. And there's just like teenagers making out and kids getting their books out of their lockers. And I was just like, what a weird moment in my life. Like, I have no idea what's about to happen. And just watching all these, I don't know, kids, it was very odd. But, and I had a conversation with one of the guys who financed it, and he's like, yeah, I really hope it does well. I remember him saying that, and I was like, me too. I was so nervous. And then we went in there, and everybody was, I mean, it was the best audience to watch it with. And yeah. They were going through all the emotions. They were crying and laughing and gasping when my character's awful. Mm-hmm. So it was a really unbelievable experience.
Yeah, it's definitely, I have to admit, I did a very little bit of crying at the end of this movie.
You did.
Which I think a lot of people will, because it just gets you at the end.
Oh, thank you.
But we won't get to that yet. We won't spoil the end. But going back, I mean, how did this project first come to you, and what were your kind of first impressions of it?
My manager, Pam, sent it to me, and she was like, I know you've been looking for something different. I think this is maybe it.
Mm-hmm.
She said, you're going to be very nervous reading this, because I think you'll relate to the character and its material that may be too close to home.
Mm-hmm.
But keep reading it, and I think it could be an amazing movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I read it, and I had that reaction. You know, I was laughing during it a lot, but then I was crying. And there were certain lines where I was like, I've said that to myself. yeah, and I knew that I immediately was so scared of it when I finished it, but I also thought, I don't want anyone else playing this.
Mm-hmm.
Because
yeah.
I had experienced so much of her emotional journey that mm-hmm. I was sort of protective of her instantly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, how would you, for people who haven't seen the movie, I mean, how would you describe this character, Brittany, and sort of what happens, the premise of the film?
The premise of the film is Brittany, inspired by a real woman story, Brittany mm-hmm. O'Neill. Brittany's in a place in her life where she's sort of in her late 20s, and she feels stuck, and everybody's doing things with their lives, and she feels like she's not. So she starts running. She just says, you know, I'll go around the block. Let me just do something for me. And then she sets a goal of running the New York City Marathon, which is a pretty big goal.
Yeah.
And one I don't think I would ever try to set for myself. But yeah, but the reason I loved it so much was because I like to play a lot of odd women.
Mm-hmm.
But this woman was layered in a way that I'd never had material that came to me
mm-hmm.
that, you know, showed someone who was funny at times and then breaks your heart at times. And sometimes you want to strangle her because she's doing the wrong thing. It's unhealthy for her, whether it be like a toxic friendship or a bad relationship. And it was just, I don't get those kind of roles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really loved that opening scene where she's taking tickets at the theater where she works.
Right.
Because I feel like you learn so much about her in those moments.
Yeah.
Where she's kind of turning it into a performance.
Yeah, when you're uncomfortable, and I think using comedy to try to deflect.
Mm-hmm.
And that was probably the scene I improvised the most.
Most
of the film, I didn't use a lot of improvisation, mm-hmm. which is the first time ever I've really been in a, in a project where that hasn't
usually
come
up. You're called on to improvise.
Yeah,
I think.
A lot of times. But this one, I sort of just, I fell so in love with the script and how I felt when I was reading it that I was sort of like, I want to stick to the, and the writer, director, he's a playwright.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, word is usually God.
Yeah.
And so I think he was pretty thrilled that we're like, okay, let's stick to the script. But that one is definitely one where I played around a bunch.
Yeah, so Paul Downs Colezo,
yes.
Is that how you say his last name?
Yes.
He's the writer-director.
Yes.
This is his first movie, I think. And it's based on his real-life friend.
Yes,
did you,
Brittany O'Neill.
Did you get to meet her at all? And
I met her while we were filming. Before we shot, Paul had sent me a video of her. I think it was like when she was raising money to mm-hmm. run the marathon. And I sort of got, you know, who she was from that and like her vibe. I think he just wanted me to know more of like her essence, which sounds mm-hmm. so creepy saying that out loud. But, you know, that's what he wanted to get across. And then a lot of the things in the film, most of the other characters in the film were not in the real Brittany O'Neill's life.
Mm-hmm.
So because of that, Paul and I sort of wanted to create the character based on more just what she had been through or her past and her present and build off of that, of who the character was.
Yeah, and the character goes through this really big transformation, both emotionally and physically, in the movie. So, I mean, what did that mean for you making it? I mean, what did you have to do to make that work on screen?
There was, it was a lot. It was the first movie I've ever been attached to, I think, 7 months before we started shooting.
Yeah.
So, I mean, first of all, dialogue-wise, I'm a horrible memorizer. Yeah. So
that's when improv comes in handy.
Yeah, improv. I'm like, yeah, I could do that. Let's throw in whatever. But you know, and he was calling me out on my. Can you curse on this?
Yeah, yeah.
And he was calling me out on my shit. He was like, you add so and yeah, some up to a lot of sentences. Yeah. I think when you, especially when you're maybe uncomfortable or I don't know. It was something I started picking up on. Mm-hmm. I'll say it a million times now, by the way, and I'm not uncomfortable, but it's just a habit. And then physically, I obviously had to start running, and I've never been a runner. I looked up on Pinterest this thing that said couch to 5K and just started following that. And I wanted to start running on my own at first without getting a trainer because in the movie, you know, she starts off on her own and she has no idea what she's doing. She's probably wearing the wrong sports bra and the wrong tennis shoes.
You don't want to look like you've been trained.
Yeah, I just sort of wanted to see, you know, and I had my sister tape me running so that I could see the mistakes I was making, how I was holding my body with posturing, all that kind of stuff. And then I decided on my own, the director, no one asked me to do this, but I wanted to do the physical journey she experiences throughout the film, which is she loses 40 pounds. So I lost 40 pounds. Because I
over the course of shooting, or how did that work?
No. If we did that, I would have died because it was 26 or 28 days.
That's so, a very short
amount of time. I lost 29 pounds before we started shooting, and then I lost 11 pounds during shooting. But I just felt like it connected me more to the material because there were certain things in it that I was like, I don't understand why she's, you know, throwing a fit here or going through this. And until I went through it on my own, I sort of was like, oh, that's why. But yeah, emotionally too, I went through a lot.
I mean, she's in a really dark place at the beginning of the movie, I think. And that, again, is probably something that you, in that dramatic way, maybe had not gotten the opportunity to play that in your previous work.
I hadn't. And because it hit so close to home too, because there were things that she was experiencing that I had experienced, and it showcases what not all, but most women go through, where we're sort of, we have an interesting relationship with our bodies from, I read a study that says from 6 years old on. Six is like when girls start going, am I big? Yeah. Am I too big boned? Am I too long? And, you know, like a string bean, they start thinking of themselves
comparing
in terms of,
to each other.
Yeah, and, exactly. Yeah. Which is horrifying. But yeah, there were definitely things that I was sort of just scared to go into because I didn't know if it would be therapeutic or if I would sort of go into a little spiral, but it turned out to maybe have both happen after shooting, but in a good way. It was stuff that I needed to examine within my own life and how I was talking to myself and treating myself.
I mean, I think there's this moment in the movie that's this kind of wake-up call of some sorts for her when she goes to the doctor and he tells her she's unhealthy and needs to lose weight. And there's this moment where she kind of pushes back and says, you know, almost accuses the doctor of fat-shaming her.
Right.
How did you kind of think about that moment? Because that's such an interesting debate going on now, too, whether is it okay to tell somebody that they need to lose weight? I mean, I think when it's a doctor doing it, maybe it's different than just a random person. But
that's what I thought. I thought Paul did such a perfect job of showcasing all of it, because that is such a big conversation. And I believe in body positivity, and I love when women are like, I am bigger and I feel really great about myself, and that's how they should feel. I think that it is different when a doctor is saying, you know, there's some unhealthy habits here and I'm worried for your health. And giving some suggestions. And then there's the difference of, you know, having maybe a friend in your life who says, I think you look better if you lost weight, or you feel better if you lost weight. Like that. Those are two completely different things. And in the film, we kind of explore everything.
Yeah.
and don't shy away from anything, which I had never really seen before in a story like this. Usually in transformation stories, it's like someone loses weight and then their life is great and they get the job and the guy and mm-hmm. that's the end of the movie. And this felt sort of different. I think when she loses weight, she almost struggles with her insides. She's mm-hmm. sort of just like, we never talk about the emotional journey of those types of characters.
Yeah, it's not gonna solve whatever's going on
exactly.
Inside of her. And she has maybe different problems and different struggles after she loses the weight in the movie.
Right, which I had never seen in a film yeah. like this.
Yeah, I mean, for you, you know, you came to Hollywood at a young age and you've been working a long time and done a lot of amazing stuff. Has your view of this, of these kinds of issues evolved, changed over the time that you've been in this industry?
It's interesting. I wish my sister was here with me right now because we talk about this all the time. Mm-hmm. She's like, I remember you coming to LA. I was 18 years old and I never had the mentality of like, let's do it, discover me. Like, mm-hmm. I was just always very humble and being like, I hope I get to do this. Mm-hmm. I really love it. But I was always in the mindset of, I wanted to do what I'm doing now, but I wanted to be whatever weight I wanted to be. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want it to be an issue because it shouldn't be an issue. And I think in my second or third job, it was somewhat addressed about me not being a size zero or not being, you know, a typical TV or movie star looking woman. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I'm not making sense. I hope I am. But other than that, I never really wanted to do anything that addressed it because I didn't think it was interesting enough. Mm-hmm. I was sort of just like, who cares?
Yeah.
There should be women that look like me and bigger and smaller, whatever. It doesn't mm-hmm. matter. It should never be what it's about. And when this script came to me, I was terrified about it because I knew I would have to talk a lot about mm-hmm. bodies and
yeah,
I mean, my relationship with my own body. But it was handled in such a way that I thought it was a beautiful way to bring up conversations that maybe we all need to talk to each other about. Like mm-hmm. I ended up talking to my girlfriends a lot about after they saw the film, they sort of just were like, I've struggled with this part or I related to Brittany in this scene. And I wish as this community of girls of women that we would get together and sort of talk about the highs and the lows. And so that to me was why I wanted to do the film. Mm-hmm. It sort of started different conversations than other stuff where it's just like body shaming. I'm just mm-hmm. done with that story.
Yeah.
I never wanted Brittany when she was at her heaviest to be the butt of a joke.
Mm-hmm.
I was very protective of the character, and so was Paul. We both wanted to be telling the same story. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, I mean, there's that really defiant moment where she says, I don't know what the exact line is, but something like, I'm not going to be your the fat sidekick anymore.
Right.
Did you ever feel like you were cast in those roles, or did you try to avoid those roles? Because I mean, she's talking about it as a role in her life,
right?
But that's also a role in you know, films and TV
yeah.
and that stuff.
It is a typically a role that sometimes I would get called in for.
Mm.
And, you know, sometimes it wouldn't be so on the nose. Sometimes it would just be like a woman surrounded by cats and she's never experienced romantic love. And I was like, well, but I have experienced love. And I know you're playing characters that may be different from you, but I was like, but this is what you guys all see me
yeah.
as. And that
and
is
it's a
sort of a bummer.
And it's,
yeah. 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 And usually those characters come in and, you know, encourage the lead to go for the job or the guy and then walk out and say, like, who took the last bagel and then leave. And I have played that character kind of before, not in those exact terms,
mm-hmm.
but that's why I loved this character so much. Mm-hmm. It was so different. And,
yeah.
and there were moments where you really were laughing with her. And then there's mm-hmm. moments where you're hopefully rooting for her or crying or angry at her. And it just was very different
yeah.
for me.
It's so inspirational, the movie, and I think people will really, you know, feel it.
Thank you. I hope people go see it.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's hard to push a movie out, especially like usually I have a Seth Rogen or a Scarlett Johansson.
This is all you.
I know. It's on my shoulders.
Coming up, Jillian talks about what it was like to become a writer on SNL before landing her breakout role on Comedy Central's Workaholics. So I want to go back. You talked about how you got to LA when you were 18, and you more or less came right out of high school to come out to Hollywood. I know you spent one semester at college, right? You grew up in Las Vegas.
I did, and I went to UNLV for a semester.
But you had already had a lot of comedy experience by that point. I know you started improv at a unusually young age, right?
Yeah, at 8 years old, I started doing improv classes, and a lot of the kids there were doing it because they were shy, and I think I was not shy. I was very excited to be like, give me a situation.
Yeah, I mean, what do you think that's brought to your career that, you know, other people who didn't start doing improv until much, much later?
I don't know. You know, it's interesting. I mean, I definitely use it. I improvise a lot in films and TV shows, and I think we're in an interesting place now where it's kind of just expected if you're doing a comedy that usually people will come up and say, now just whatever you want to do, which doesn't always happen, but for the most part it does. So I guess it gave me a leg up in that. Yeah.
Do you like that, or do you sometimes think, why can't you figure out what I'm supposed to do?
No, for the most part, I really enjoy it. Yeah. I really like, you know, figuring out in the moment something silly to say or what the character would add. And sometimes it doesn't work, and you watch it and you're like, yeah, they use the best stuff, which is just the written stuff. But a lot of times it's just fun. It's just a fun exercise to come in and do it. Although I feel like I haven't done an improv show in a very long time, and I would be very nervous to do one.
Like a live improv show.
Yeah. I think it's very different when you're doing improv off of written material and when you're just getting up there and they're like, okay, these two are going to avoid the letter R in every sentence they say, and it's Shakespearean times, and you're just like, oh, like, yeah, it's
you got to be on your toes.
Yeah.
So when you came out here, you joined the Groundlings. Was that pretty quick after you were here?
I moved here, and I remember my high school teacher, my drama teacher, told me about a couple of improvisational schools, but one was the Groundlings. And I remember looking in a Backstage West, and there was a picture of Will Ferrell and Sherry O'Terry. And I was like, well, that's where I want to go. And I went and saw a show, a live show. And I just remember thinking, this is all I want to do. Because SNL was always the goal.
Yeah,
I always wanted to go there. And so, you know, you walk into the lobby and there's just pictures from, you know, back all the way back in the 70s. And there's pictures of Phil Hartman. And then you see Maya Rudolph and Will Ferrell and all my comedic heroes. So I then saw a live show, and it was like watching SNL in person.
Yeah.
And I just remember thinking, this is all I want to do.
Yeah. And who was there in your class when you were there?
When I was coming up, I feel like when I got into the Sunday Company, it was Taryn Killam and Dana Powell, Sarah Baker. We had a lot of really Ryan Gall, very talented people.
And it did lead to an SNL audition.
It did.
And so you did not end up on the cast, but you did end up becoming a writer on the show for a season.
Yes.
So how did you kind of feel about that at the time? Because I'm sure there's mixed feelings in a situation like that.
Sure. I mean, well, I got the audition. I went out and did that. And then I found out 2 weeks later that I didn't get the job, and I was crushed. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's bad to, I guess, have just one goal and one very specific goal.
Yeah.
Because then if you don't get it, you're sort of like, where do I go? I mean, I wasn't even thinking about doing more TV or trying to get into
that's
movies.
That's all you wanted.
That was it. Yeah. That was it. And when I got the call, I remember my sister saying to me, she's like, because we live together, and she said, you can be as mad as you want for an hour, and then we have to try to get over it. And I was like, okay. And I really was upset in that hour. And then I sort of was trying to move on, but I was really upset about it. And I got a call from my manager who said, I think it was a couple weeks after that, that Seth Meyers wanted to meet with you to possibly be a writer on the show. And I was like, oh, the dream is back alive.
Yeah.
Possibly. And so I flew out. I think my interview was on a Monday. And then I got a call Monday night from Seth when I was just roaming the streets in New York. I went to the Wax Museum. I was at Magnolia Bakery. Mm. I'll never forget it.
Yeah.
I was at
when he called you?
When he called me.
Wow.
And I was ordering a piece of cake because I thought I didn't get the job. And I thought if I didn't, I want a piece of cake.
Yeah.
And so I was paying for it when I got the call, and I was like, "Ha, hello." And it's like, "Hey, it's Seth, what are you doing?" That was the first thing he said. And I go, "I'm getting cake." And he goes, "What?" And I go, "Just what were you calling about?"
You go.
And he says, I wanted to see if you wanted to do the job. And I was like, are you serious? Yes. And he says, okay, you start tomorrow.
Wow.
And then this weekend you can fly back on Saturday and pack up your life and then move back on Sunday. And then we keep going.
Crazy.
Yeah.
So what was your experience like there as a writer? I mean, I'm sure you had hopes that it could lead to being on the cast. But just in that one season that you were there, what was it like? I mean, what stands out when you think about it now?
I remember the first episode being a really big deal. Mm-hmm. I cried a lot. I definitely went to watch the band warm up. That was, I mean...
Who was it that first show?
Do you remember? I mean the band,
the band
that plays on, you know,
yeah.
the stage. It was it was unreal getting to hear the, you know, the saxophone player and all of that, and going over and checking the cue cards a million times because a sketch that I wrote got in.
Oh yeah, what was that first one?
It's fine. It's not very very funny, but it's I mean it was hysterical because Kristen Wiig was the star of it, but it's Kristen Wiig. And Megan Fox was the host, and it was now your mom talks to Megan Fox, and it was just a mom folding laundry while like Megan Fox is hanging out.
That sounds very funny.
It was silly.
And now your mom talks to Megan Fox while you finish getting ready.
She should be down in a few minutes.
Okay, great.
Yeah. Is it Megan or Megan? Megan?
It's Megan.
Oh, okay. So you did the movie Transformers?
Oh, it's actually called Transformers.
Oh, okay. I only saw the preview for it. Did it get made?
It did. Yes.
Oh, okay. Congrats. I hear it's a tough business.
But there were like a lot of little nods to my mom in it. Like my mom says, "Enjoy the journey," which is so lame. And she just keeps being like, "Well, you got to ETJ, enjoy the journey." I had such a sore throat by the end of the night because I was so nervous that by the end I couldn't even speak. And I remember there was a moment when I was running upstairs and fixing things on cue cards or like cutting stuff, because in between rehearsal and air, you know, if your sketch gets in, then it's like, well, it also needs to be this amount of minutes, or this joke didn't work, so let's punch it up. And I was running around and I remember walking by Lorne Michaels' office and the door was open, and he's like, and they said, you know, "Come on in real quick." And I walked in and Martin Short was there, and he was like, "Hi, it's very nice to meet you." And I was like, "Is this what it's always going to be like?" And
was it?
Not always, but yeah, every once
but
in a while
of.
People would pop in. Yeah. I didn't, I feel like I didn't do as well after that first episode. So I wasn't getting all of those introductions, but it was a wild place to be.
Yeah, you were nominated for an Emmy for the Betty White episode.
Yes.
I saw. That's pretty cool. What do you remember? That was a cultural moment.
Oh man, what a big moment. And it was funny because I remember them wanting to bring back a lot of women from the previous seasons and sort of surrounding her and also making sure she wasn't caring too much of the show, because I think she was 80 at the time.
I think older than that.
Maybe older.
Yeah. I think she was like almost 90 or
maybe.
Yeah.
You might be right. And the thing is, she came in and she was quicker than most people that hosted the show. I mean, we do the thing, the first thing we do every week is you sit down with the host and you pitch them ideas of what you're thinking of. And some of them are fake, then, and you're not going to write them, but they just get a laugh in the room. Mm-hmm. And some of them are real. And every single person, she had a funny comeback or like a one-liner that could have been in it that she was just, you know, thinking off the cuff. So talented. And but yeah, I was also extremely excited because all these women that I had, you know, they were the posters on my wall were coming, and I was writing sketches with them. And Kristen and I tried to get a sketch on that was so ridiculous. I think at the time it was playing a lot in the back of cabs. You know, there's like always those commercials that play in taxis. And
there's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
And one of them was, it's like Celtic female singers, and it was just these live shows that they were doing, and so we tried to do a commercial for that, and it was like women that are Irish and standing, looking out over a mountain near a castle, singing these epic songs. And I stole the DVD of it because they always make DVDs of it so you can watch it back after. Mm-hmm. Because if it makes it to air, you know, you can be like, oh, well, this moment didn't quite play well. And
it was taped sketch.
Yeah. But I definitely have it.
But it didn't make it on.
It didn't make it on.
You should just leak that. That's.
I wish I could. I'd probably be immediately sued.
So yeah, so you were there for one season. How, you know, do you feel like it was a struggle, or do you feel like it went well? Because I mean, you ultimately you weren't asked to come back, which must have been disappointing.
Yeah, it was disappointing. It was a very informative experience. I just felt like I was learning how to write for other people for the first time because at Groundlings they teach you how to write for your own voice and figure it out a little bit more. And doing this, I was sort of just jumping in and being like, well, how do I write for Kristen? How do I write for Keenan? Mm-hmm. How is it different from Bill Hader, how you write for him? And also just trying to figure out, you know, how to get a sketch on the air. It's just you're throwing shit everywhere and you're just like hoping something sticks, or there's something funny about the idea. So it's very competitive. Mm-hmm. But I also was like such a super fan that I don't even think I knew that I was really struggling. I was just sort of like, this is amazing and horrible. It's sort of all the emotions you're going through.
The schedule always seems like it's pretty punishing.
It is intense. I mean, I just remember feeling constantly bloated. Everyone drank coffee just all day long, and I'm not a coffee drinker, so I would have a Diet Coke every time they went on a coffee run.
Yeah.
And also, you're staying up till 6 in the morning writing sketches, and none of it's funny anymore, and you're just all broken out because, for me, I was like, my makeup has just been sitting on my face for 38 hours, and some people are sleeping there because the table reads at 12, so why go home? It was insane. And then you'd write a musical sketch and you'd go and be like, hey, Ryan Reynolds, can you come practice this sketch with me for the table read? And so it's so bizarre.
Do you feel like you got used to all of that crazy sort of weird celebrity interactions by the end of the season? Or did it stay weird?
There's a level that you kind of have to be comfortable, or else they spot you. They're like sort of like, what's up with the weird person just with their jaw on the floor? But I still every time was like, you know, I'd call my family and be like, this is what Ashton Kutcher just said. Just freaking out.
Yeah.
About being around that. It's definitely a different environment than anything I've ever. And it's also a lot of people were finding out they were fired by a quote in an article where they were like, oh, I'm not coming back.
Is that what happened for you? Or?
No, not for me. My manager found out from Seth that they weren't asking me back. And I remember I was with my parents in my apartment and they saw me get the call and I was like, oh yeah, what is happening with that? And then they just saw me pick up my laptop. I'm like not a violent person either. I picked up my laptop and I just threw it against a wall.
Oh my God.
Because I was so angry and upset, and I it was nowhere near anyone.
Yeah.
I just wanted to throw something.
Yeah.
And then I sort of was like, well, it is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I really am. It's weird because I always thought that that's what I wanted to do. But I recently realized if I had stayed there,
mm-hmm.
then I would have missed really big things. And not yeah. even just like career wise, because that's very exciting. Some of the stuff I got to do. But I mean more in terms of like I wouldn't have met my dog that I have. And I mean, he's the love of my life. And I wouldn't have gotten to spend time with my dad before he passed away. Mm. And I would have been gone, you know.
Yeah.
So it's just weird things that you don't realize in the moment are supposed to happen.
Mm. And yeah.
I really believe in that now.
Yeah. Well, one thing that happened that wouldn't have is Workaholics.
Right.
Which came pretty soon after you left SNL.
Shot that summer while I was waiting to hear mm-hmm. if I was going back.
Wow. Yeah.
And then I found out I didn't. And then it took a year for Workaholics to come out. So I actually went back to my day job.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I went back to being a receptionist at a talent agency.
Mm-hmm. After SNL.
Yes.
That must have been odd.
It was very odd. It was very humbling.
Yeah.
I was answering phone calls and casting directors were calling in for other people and people were coming to pick up their checks. Mm-hmm. I was just like, that must be nice to be working.
But eventually Workaholics did get picked
up. It did.
And that became, I mean, did you have any idea at that time what a big deal that would be? Because I think that's really what put you on the map for a lot of people.
Yeah.
I think it's probably the first time I became aware of who you were.
And it was helpful that my name was so similar on the show with Jillian Belk. My name's Jillian Bell. So I was like, oh, people, when people first started being like, oh, I know you mm. from something, it was like, they were like, hey, Jillian.
Yeah.
And then they're like, what's your real name? I'm like, Jillian.
That's easy.
So that's helpful.
Hey, Blake. I'm feeling sick, so I need you to work my desk for the rest of the day.
Ugh, you look horrible.
Oh.
Yeah, about that, I can't. Not today. Coda Ronin comes out tonight, and I gotta save a spot in line at the video game store. Actually, I was just about to leave. Check it out.
It's good for him.
Huh? I'm gonna put him in the bathroom stall, tell everybody I'm crapping the rest of the day.
Okay, well, I can't lie to you guys. I'm not really sick. I told Alice that so I could leave early to go see Walking with Dinosaurs Arena Spectacular.
maybe one of these guys could cover for you.
I really shouldn't. It would set a precedence in this office that we don't need.
No, for Alice, we'd probably end up fugging all day,
yeah.
Getting no work done.
Please, Blake. I mean, my lifelong dream is to live in Jurassic Park times.
1993?
Please, I really need this. I need it. Okay? Please, Blake!
All right. Yeah.
Oh, okay, great.
Yeah.
That's Alice's appointment book.
Okay, sure. Appointment book. Have a lot of fun.
Get out of here.
Jillian, feel better?
Oh, no, I'm not actually sick.
Yeah, right.
So what you said about my face earlier was... That was rude.
I think I did really believe in the show as far as those guys.
Mm-hmm.
I always thought that they were so brilliant. I met them a while back. We were all in this thing called like National Lampoon Lemmings. They were trying to reboot it from the 70s. And we ended up just going on a tour that was like three places. We all quit our jobs to go do it for the tour because we thought we were getting paid so much and going everywhere. And
did you know it was only going to be three stops?
No,
at that
we
point?
Didn't. We didn't. We thought we'd sell out everywhere, and then we didn't. And we also, I remember the first place we went, we got our per diem. It was our first experience with per diem, and where you get a little bit of money each day just to go buy food or whatever. And we spent it all when we got there on a limousine.
Whose idea was that?
I don't remember. Someone said it. It feels like an Adam Devine thing. Someone said it, and then we were all like, yeah, and then we'll go to a liquor store and then buy so much alcohol with that and just drive around this limo. We were in Vernon Hills in Illinois, and then we found out the next morning that was for the whole trip. So we had spent all our money the first night.
It's so weird that tour didn't work out.
I know. But then anyway, cut to this. They, you know, anytime they needed a woman in one of their live sketch shows,
mm-hmm.
they called me and, you know, asked me to do something, and I would go by and play a weird aunt.
Mm-hmm.
And then they said they're writing the show and Comedy Central's interested and would I want to play a weird woman? And I said, yes, 100%. And they wrote it.
Yeah. What was the experience like making that show? Was that a lot of improvisation as well?
Yeah, there was a lot of room for playing around. Mm-hmm. And I feel like as the season went on too, we did that more and more. Mm-hmm. But their writing too is killer. The table reads, we'd be laughing so hard. And they knew these characters so well. I mean, mm-hmm. it was like a totally exaggerated version mm-hmm. of themselves.
Coming up, Jillian teases her upcoming gender-swapped remake of Splash, in which she plays the Tom Hanks character, and Channing Tatum is a clueless merman. The other film that I wanted to touch on that came out this summer, which I just absolutely loved, is Sword of Trust.
Oh, thank you. Movie was mostly improvised as well.
I got to see that at South by Southwest.
Oh, great.
And it was just really impressive. Also with Michaela Watkins is in that.
Yes.
And Brittany as well.
I know. I would do anything with Michaela Watkins.
Yeah.
We want to write a movie together. So we might. But I told her, I was like, please be in everything with me. Mm-hmm. She just makes everything so enjoyable. She's so smart with her choices. And she's an incredible actress.
Yeah.
Every movie or TV show she's in, she just steals it. And it's such a gentle way of stealing things, too. You're never mad about it. You're just like, yes, take over. She's brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, Sword of Trust is really almost all improvised, right?
Yeah, we shot it in 11 days.
Wow.
11 days, which is, I've never had an experience like that. Even for pilots, I feel like it's like 39 days. And you're like, what are we doing? It's a half hour.
Yeah. It's impressive.
Yeah.
Efficient.
Yeah. 11 days, yeah. Crazy.
Your character is so funny in that film.
Thank you.
She's a little naive, I would say.
She is. She's a little... She's sweet.
Do you like playing that type of character?
I do. It's fun. I feel like I've gotten to play that character kind of a couple of times, and I've also gotten to play like a villain or a pimp, and it's very different.
Yeah.
But both have their major pluses. I really enjoy playing someone who's kind of naive. I always think like there's something so sweet about someone who doesn't always get what's happening in the conversation, but nods and contribute something, but it's never the right thing.
Yeah. Yeah, very different from your character in something like 22 Jump Street, I would say.
Very different.
So out of that, is that where you met Channing Tatum?
At yes.
At 22 Jump Street?
That's the first time I met him.
Because I think this is a question that you get in about every interview that you do, but what's going on with the Splash remake?
Someone is writing it right now, and we're waiting on that draft. Mm-hmm. I'm very excited to get to read it.
So what's the sort of story behind that? This was something that was your idea?
I went to Channing and had a meeting with him and his production company because we wanted to work together again. We'd done 22, and then also he came and did a part on Idiot Sitter and he was brilliant. And I just, it's funny when you meet people that you're like, oh, we are similar and we just like to make each other laugh and there's no drama there. It's just you want to keep working with them. Mm-hmm. So we sat down and I came up with a few ideas. Some were very stupid, some were crazy. And we started talking about Channing playing a character that was sort of discovering the world for the first time. I think he really loves the movie Elf.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about movies that did that well, and we started talking about Splash, and we were like, what if we did Splash? And then we couldn't stop laughing about it, and then we sort of got serious, and we're like, what if we did Splash? and we just thought that would be interesting in doing a role reversal on that.
Yeah,
and
so he would play the merman.
Yes, and I would play Tom Hanks's character, which... I mean, I always want to play Tom Hanks's characters.
Yeah.
So, and then we went and we pitched it to Imagine, and they were into it. And then we pitched it to Disney, and they bought it in the room, which I had never experienced, and was sort of like, do we just shoot it now? And then it's like, well, someone has to write it the things.
Oh, yeah.
And it's taken a while just because these things take a while.
Yeah.
But I'm really excited. I hope we'll get to do it. I think we will.
Yeah, I think maybe. Do you think Channing Tatum in the room helps with the selling it in the room?
I mean, it can't hurt. It can't hurt to have Channing in the room.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that'll be really exciting. I mean, what else? And I guess it's still so early process, but I mean, are there other updates to it that you're kind of excited about or that you talked about when you talk about it?
There are. I definitely can't talk about any of them.
Okay.
But I will say, in terms of, you know, things related to like the movie I just did with Brittany and all this, one of the things I said to the writer that is very important to me is I never want it to be like, how did this girl get that guy? I'm like sort of done with that story. So that hopefully, unless there's a hysterical joke that has to stay in about it, I would fight hard not to have that in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what I want to do now as we kind of start the wrap up is go through some of the things that you've done in your career, because you've done so much that we haven't talked about. And if one kind of story or memory comes to mind that you can share with us.
Okay.
So I think probably the first thing that I ever saw you in, and a lot of people as well, was Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Yes, that was my second job.
Which was, I just rewatched the episode last night, actually.
Really?
And so you're in most of the whole episode.
Yeah.
And your first scenes with not only Larry David, but also Jerry Seinfeld.
Right. Here's the latest script. There you go.
Thank you very much.
And, reminder, you have lunch with Richard Lewis, both of you.
Okay, thanks.
What is that?
Yeah, the air conditioner is, I don't know, it's making noise
up there. Oh, I'll get it. Yeah. Don't worry about it. I used to do this for my mom all the time. Oh, yep. Hang on. Sounds like a rattlesnake is in there. Is it there? Does that sound better?
Yeah, that's a little better, yeah.
There we go. All right. Do you guys need anything else? Are you good?
No, we're good. It's good.
Sure?
Yeah.
Okay,
thank you. Thanks, Maureen.
I can't take it anymore. How could you walk around like that?
Every day.
Every day, every day.
We have to make a change.
We can't. Julia got her the job. We can't fire her. We have to talk to her.
Okay.
You need to talk to her about her clothing.
I can't do that.
What are you talking about?
I can't do it.
Why not?
I don't want to.
And so what was that like to walk in and just start doing a scene with them as one of your first jobs?
I mean, I can't even tell you what that is similar to SNL, where you don't really know what you're getting into. I mean, I auditioned for it. I didn't know it was even a guest star.
Mm-hmm.
It was supposed to be just like, Larry David's assistant or secretary. Mm-hmm. And then it became sort of a thing where at the end of the day they could say, okay, and then you're coming back tomorrow. And you're like, oh, I am? And they're like, yeah, tomorrow you'll be coming in. We're doing a stunt. I'm like, oh, okay. And then there was one moment where they were like, here, just come over here. We want you to meet someone. And they're like, here's Jerry Seinfeld. I'm like, oh, are you in this? He's like, yeah, I'm going to be doing something.
Because there's no script or anything, so you don't know.
There's like a scriptment, basically. Mm. Like there's an outline of what is going to be said, but they don't give it to you because they don't want you to pre-plan anything. So there was a scene, that scene with Jerry Seinfeld, where I walked in and they were already sitting at the desks.
Mm-hmm.
All the cameramen had the cameras on their shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
And then someone walked up to me, the director, and said, you know, here's the 8 things you need to get across in this. You're moving. You feel like you had a religious experience. You bought an RV. Can you, can Larry finance something for you? I don't remember everything, but it was, you know, a bunch of things. And then you're going to quit respectfully and then you're going to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And so you don't know how much time you have or whatever, but you're just sort of running in and hopefully remembering everything and they're taping all of it. But it is fly by the seat of your pants.
Yeah, it sounds like an insane amount of pressure.
So much pressure. But you either just go, well, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
You only can do as much as you remember. Mm-hmm. And if you don't get something, they'll go again. Mm-hmm.
Did you, I don't know, when, at which point you found out that your character's, you know, the premise is that your character has this short, wears short shirts and showing the bare midriff. That's the name of the episode, the bare midriff. Did you have any reservations about that?
Yes.
Or?
Are you kidding me? I was terrified. I was like, what do I do here? And I sort of just thought, this is an incredible opportunity. I mean, to have my second job be this guest star on Curb Your Enthusiasm. And I loved improvising. I loved the show. And I was sort of like, well, what if she owns it? What if she's just really, you know, because that's the good thing about the show is you can improvise whatever you want. You can create whatever character you want. Mm-hmm. So I was sort of like, what if she's really happy with her body and she's proud of how she looks? And that's the way I felt good about doing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So another film role after that was in Bridesmaids. You play Girl at Shower.
Yes, Girl at Shower. I walk by when Kristen Wiig first walks into the bridal shower.
Did you audition for that movie?
That was after SNL. So mm-hmm. I think she Kristen just and that were throwing me a bone, which was very nice. But it was so funny because my dad always went to the theaters every Sunday. That's just growing up, mm-hmm. I went with them and he went and saw the movie, and then he called me. He said, "I didn't see you.
I missed it."
I think you blinked. Just go back. Here's the exact moment it happened. So he went to the theater twice to see that film.
That's very sweet. So later, this is kind of an interesting story. You've been in two Paul Thomas Anderson movies.
Yes.
The Master and then Inherent Vice. And the legend goes that he was a fan of Workaholics.
Yes.
And that's how he found
you. I had no idea because I got the audition for it and I met with the casting director and then I got the part and I was so excited. I'm still a huge fan of his. And then I went to set and I remember him saying, thanks for coming and doing this. I know it's not. And I was like, are you kidding me? And he said, I'm a big fan of Workaholics. I was like, oh, I didn't know how this came about. But he is a big, I guess, comedy nerd, comedy fan.
And you did some improv in that in The Master as well. Is that right?
A little bit. It's interesting. I think that was blown out of proportion. It was sort of just like there was more of a discussion about what it would be and he was playful with it a little bit more than I expected him to be. But I think it's just because he does really respect people who have improvisational backgrounds and he loves comedy. And so we just talked a lot about the scene and what it would be. Mm-hmm. And if there was somewhere where I went off a little bit, he was fine with that. And there were certain scenes that are not in the film, but he was sort of like, Jillian, why don't you take the lead and start off this conversation at the dinner. And so I would do that. And so that's sort of where the improv thing came from. But it's not even in the film. So it wasn't that good, I guess.
And what was it like to watch, Philip Seymour Hoffman work up close?
Unreal. Yeah. Unreal. I just remember being like, remember this, like take it all in. My first scene in the whole movie was just sitting there in the boat and we were watching him give a toast to his daughter who had just been married. And he just did it, 40 times it felt like. And each of them were different and some of them were scary and some of them were joyful. It was just every emotion he went through and I couldn't believe it that I got to sit there and watch it.
Yeah.
It was like I claim that as like my college experience, getting to watch him and Joaquin Phoenix and Laura Dern and Amy Adams, just incredible actors killing it. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, every once in a while, I just had to be like, ah, ha, 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 holding a glass of champagne, but I didn't care.
Yeah, that's a pretty cool experience.
Very cool experience.
You were also in the last season of Eastbound and Down.
Yes.
Playing opposite Tim Heidecker,
that was my hubby.
Your suburban husband.
Yeah.
So what was that set like?
Oh, it was fun. It was a lot of fun. I mean, Danny McBride is one of the funniest people on the planet.
Yeah.
And he's also very sweet, like sweet Southern gentleman.
Mm. Yeah. Unexpectedly compared to his characters.
Compared to his characters, yes. Yeah. But I had a great time, and we were shooting in North Carolina in Wilmington, and I fell in love with Wilmington. The whole experience was super fun, and Tim Heidecker makes me laugh so hard. And I was playing a totally different character. I mean, I feel like I was doing 22 Jump Street before or after that, and I'm playing like a college student, and then in this I'm playing like a mother of two or something, and who just like talks
pretty good
about
range.
Wearing pads.
Yeah.
Like it's just very different.
Yeah. And then I saw you have a couple of things coming up that I don't know how much you can talk about, but figured I'd ask anyway. There's a movie called El Tonto that's written and directed by Charlie Day.
Yes, the incredible Charlie Day.
Yeah, from It's Always Sunny.
Yeah, this is his first time directing a film, and he's the star of it, and I think it's going to be wonderful. I can't wait to see it. I only shot for like 4 hours one day.
Oh, really?
That's it. I just have like a little cameo, but I mean the cast he got on that too. Like John Malkovich is in his first film. I'm
that's
like, what?
Awesome.
Yeah, yeah. But he's so funny and brilliant and a sweet guy. So I wasn't surprised he got such a good cast.
And then I also saw you're in the upcoming Bill and Ted movie.
Yes, I just shot it.
Oh, really?
I did.
What was that like?
It was crazy. I was there the first day that they were shooting, that they were getting in character. So I was like in the first scene with them. And I walked up to Keanu and I go, oh, first one. And he goes, why did you do that? I was like, I'm so sorry. But he's so sweet.
Getting in Keanu's head.
I was like, I'm so sorry. I'm just excited. It's very exciting to be around them. I mean, them getting back into these characters that they haven't played in like 20 years or whatever.
It's pretty nuts.
So nuts. So nuts. Watching them rehearse and in those voices. And I remember there were certain lines too that I was like, you have the next line. Remember to speak. Remember to speak. Because I was just watching them. Yeah. And it's to be in one of those is crazy.
That's great. And then you mentioned there's an animated show coming out.
Yes, Bless the Hearts.
Bless the Hearts, which is kind of going in that Simpsons Family Guy.
It's on
zone.
After The Simpsons, which we were like,
oh, wow.
What?
So what can you share about that one?
It's a story about a Southern family who's sort of broke as a joke. And they're always doing things to try to live the American dream and provide for their family.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of do it in backwards ways, but it's all out of love. And I play Violet on the show, who's the daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And she's sort of this artistically talented, cool. I mean, probably not cool in school, but like later on in life, she's a cool chick.
Mm-hmm.
She is into Rocky Horror Picture Show and B horror movies, and she's sort of the voice of reason in this crazy family.
Mm, fun. So you've obviously done a lot of amazing stuff. You have this movie, Brittany Runs a Marathon, coming out. Are there things that and Splash, very exciting. Are there things that you're feeling like you really want to do that you haven't been able to achieve yet that you want to kind of put out in the world?
Yeah, I would love to do a straight up drama. This has a bit some dramatic elements in it, Brittany, but I would love to do a straight drama, which I think I am going to do possibly. Mm. And then my absolute dream in life is to play a witch. That's all I want to play. And I don't care if it's like a, Hocus Pocus type witch or like
say,
a
Hocus Pocus reboot seems like it could definitely happen.
Oh, I think it is happening, but it's happening with all the original ladies,
oh, really?
Which is very exciting.
It's also exciting. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But I don't care if it's in like a horror film. I don't care what it
you
is, but I
want
to play a witch. But you can play a witch at any age though, which is very exciting. So I'm just hoping that it does happen.
Why a witch?
I don't know. I love witches. I just think they're so much fun and they're so powerful and they're like sort of the original feminists, just speaking out and saying their truths and then people burn them for it. And I don't know. I love anything that's a little macabre.
Yeah. Well, if anyone listening is writing a witch movie,
send
or
it my
witch
way.
TV show, yeah. Jillian is
I'll play
ready.
It.
And finally, we end every episode by asking the guests, what is the last thing that made you laugh really hard?
I knew this was coming too. And I don't know. I mean, I will be honest. I feel like my favorite show to watch is Impractical Jokers.
Mm-hmm.
That's my favorite show. So it's probably that. I think all of those guys are so funny. And I just met them recently.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I met them at Comic-Con. I had met Sal before, but I had never met the rest of the guys. And oh, I'm just such a fan. I really geeked out. Like, I had 2 glasses of white wine very quickly when I found out I was going to meet them because I was so nervous.
That's hilarious.
They make me laugh. So it's probably that.
All right. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming in and doing this today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, of course. Thank you again to Jillian Bell for coming out and talking to me today. She is so sweet and so funny, and I really, really enjoyed talking to her. Brittany Runs a Marathon is opening nationwide in theaters August 23rd. This is a really special movie that deserves love, so please check it out if you can. And if you enjoy this show, please tell your friends and rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. It really helps people find the show. You can find me on Twitter at Matt Wilstein and at thedailybeast.com. The Last Laugh is distributed by Himalaya Media for The Daily Beast. It is produced by Jason Smith and Scott Porch for Starburns Audio and edited by Mackenzie Mazel. Our theme music is by Claude, who you can find on Instagram at claude.mp3. You can find this show every week on Apple Podcasts, the Himalaya app, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And you can find show notes and highlights from each episode on thedailybeast.com. See you next week!
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.